You're now listening to the Inside Out Podcast with Jimmy Hunt. Get it.
Welcome to Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. My job is simple, to improve my mental fitness through any means possible and deconstruct what works, what doesn't, and what I think may be able to help you become mentally fitter. And quite often it leads me to some pretty interesting people, places, and stories. And today I have got stories for you. Specifically, the big story of the end of last year. The story that I was alluding to at the end of season one, where I was about to head off and walk the entire length of New Zealand, the Te Araroa Trail. And with me today to help me tell my story is my wife, Libby Grace. Hi, Libby Grace.
Hi, Jimmy Hunt. Excited to hear this story.
Yeah.
As if I haven't already heard it 100 times.
Yeah.
It's
because obviously a lot of people have asked me in the last, when did I finish this?
You finished in, you got March? Back in March. So I think you finished in February.
What month is it now? Who knows?
October.
What month is that? 10.
Yes.
8 months ago.
Roughly 8 months ago you finished. Yeah.
Yeah, I've told the story a bunch of times to a bunch of people in lots of different ways. Now I'm going to tell it to you guys in a longer format and prompted by my wife.
Yeah, and we've had some questions from listeners over the last 8 months just getting in touch to ask what, you know, some things about what it was like for Jimmy. So I'm going to use some of those questions and some of my own to prompt him to rediscover his memories and share them with you. And I think it's going to be quite insightful.
Off you go then.
Okay. Let's get started. So basically, first of all, just tell us what is Te Araroa. Like, what did you do?
I walked from the very tippy top of the North Island of New Zealand, a small country down the bottom of the world, to the very bottom, Bluff, a tiny little town that is at the bottom. Almost the bottom. There is an island off the bottom, which coincidentally, a bunch of international people go and do hikes around Bluff. Around Stewart Island. Not to get to the very, very bottom, but to really finish the bottom of New Zealand. So mainland New Zealand from the very top to the very bottom, 3,025 kilometers long. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, New Zealand's 3,025 kilometers long. No! New Zealand is something like 1,600 kilometres long, as the crow flies, as they say. We zigzag the hell out of this country and go from coast to coast, left to right, up and down, back on ourselves occasionally, and it equals 3,025 in the end.
Very long way. And so it is a trail, though. It's a well-known...
It is not really a trail.
Okay.
That is a misnomer of epic proportions. When people think of through hikes, which are walking the length of a country, you think of things like the Pacific Crest Trail, the Appalachian Trail, the Camino de Santiago. Those are the three sort of big through hikes in the world, plus the TA. And all of those trails are trails. Camino, not so much, but the Pacific Crest Trail, Appalachian Trail, you literally get on, they're nicely marked, they are well graded, you can ride a horse down them.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally horse graded trails, so they're never above, I think it's 10%, might be 15% gradient the whole time. And you just follow it. And if you just keep following it and stay on the same path, you're going to get to the other end of the country.
So anyone can do it, essentially.
Well, anyone can do anything. But yeah, like you step on the trail, you keep walking, you get to the end. Te Araroa is a hodgepodge of dock trails, Department of Conservation trails, roads, backcountry roads, people's farms that they let you on out of the kindness of their hearts, highways, and then things like ferries and canoe rides and jet boat rides and all sorts of things in order to be able to connect them all up together.
So it sounds like in typical Kiwi fashion, our national trail that we export to the world is number 8 wire.
You make it up as you go along.
It's red gumboots, number 8 wire. We've stuck it together and get from one point to the other.
It's regarded as the toughest through hike in the world.
Right.
For two reasons. One, because it is mentally draining.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of people that I met who were mentally broken by this trail was high.
Right.
High. Now, not only were they mentally broken by the brokenness of the actual trail, the fact that you literally get lost 4 to 5 times a day because it's so poorly marked, but our weather is so crazy. And our weather on this particular section of November to February slash, it was actually started earlier, September to March, we had 3 cyclones in this thing that I had to walk through, plus just normal New Zealand weather.
Crazy.
And that absolutely messes with people. Mm. And so I saw a comment on the TA group recently and someone's like, is it really as hard as people say? And this woman came in and said, I've walked the Appalachian Trail, I've walked the Pacific Crest Trail, I've walked the Camino, I've walked the TA, by far and away the TA is the hardest.
The hardest.
Yeah, she's like, wow. Oh,
well,
it's
then
rough.
It has to be asked, Jimmy Hunt, why did you decide to do this?
Well, first of all, baby, I don't know that. as you know, for pretty much most of the things I do, I don't do too much research. This, I will give, I did the most research of anything I've ever done.
Right.
And the reason I did the most research was because you are literally at the behest of nature, the elements.
Mm-hmm.
You have to carry everything you need on your back at all times.
Right, so tell us about that. Like, what do you take with you?
Well, a lot of people take a lot of things.
Right.
I didn't take very much. So in the hiking world, you've got everything from sort of regular backpacking down to what is called ultralight. And ultralight means that basically, and the definition's all different, but basically if you're carrying under 6 kilograms worth of stuff, you're ultralight. So think about your backpack at school, about 6 kilograms.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you carry to walk through the Alps, to walk through cyclones, to walk through everything, to have stuff to sleep under, to be able to have all of your clothing and everything.
Okay.
Now, that is a base weight. So on top of that, you have basically your consumables. So under 6 kilograms of base weight is ultralight. But then you add what is essentially 1 kilogram of food per day. And then water on top of that. But the abundance of water in New Zealand on the trail,
makes
so you actually
easier.
Don't really have to carry water.
Yeah.
You can just filter it every time you want to stop.
Nice.
There will always be a stream within like 100 metres of you. And you, right. Not, yeah, I mean, I'm joking, but within 1 kilometre of you, there'll be a fresh water source somewhere and you can stop and get that if you don't want to carry it. And so my base weight was 6.5 kilograms.
Mm-hmm.
That's your tent, your sleeping bag, all of your clothes, all of your stuff, everything you need. Mine weighed about 6.5 kilograms, which isn't all that much.
So you researched what you should take in your pack to keep it ultralight. You researched a little bit about the trail.
Yeah, a little bit about the trail.
And then you still decided, yep, I'm going to do it. So
yeah.
Why?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have never been so compelled to do something ever in my life. I wanted and really was excited about Lyloing the Waikato River. I really, really wanted to build the biggest water slide in the world, and so I did that. This was, I think I mentioned it at the start and in some other episodes, but I did this because I was compelled to through what was basically words in my head given to me during meditation saying that you should go and do this. And I was like, I'm not really sure. And they're like, nah. And then like everything just worked out as it was supposed to. The money for it turned up miraculously. The timing turned up miraculously. and everything just fell into place. And I was like, I just have to go and do this.
Yeah. I can attest to your demeanor. I remember you telling me, you literally said, I have to go and walk a really long way. Yeah. And that's kind of, I guess, the words
and
that
you think
of. Yeah. And at that point, you'd been in the hiking group here for, you know, a year and a half, going on hikes twice a week through, you know, anywhere from, I don't know, 12Ks to 30Ks in a day. And I thought, oh, yeah, no, he's going to tell me that he wants to do a bigger. And I think actually around that time, you talked about a couple of guys or a couple of people you'd met who had been doing a little bit of camping in the mountains here, that they were doing overnight hikes or thinking about doing overnight hikes. So I thought that's what you meant. I thought when you said, I'm going to go walk a long way, I thought, oh, he's going to go away for a few days into the jungle, into the mountains here. See you later. And then, no, you said to me, I need to go walk a really long way.
3,000 plus kilometers.
And so it did kind of, it came at a time for us when life was looking good. We hadn't decided to build the house even. We hadn't been told we were moving out of place.
We had.
Okay.
Yeah, we had. It was only like July, August.
Right. But everything was looking good. Yeah. Maybe we'd started building the house and it was all looking fine.
The house was supposed to be finished by the time.
By the time you left.
Yeah. So we'd started building.
That's right. And so it was all sweet. Yeah. Off you go. Have fun. Have a jovial time. Just tra-la-la-ing for through the forest, as I like to call it. And I do remember you talk about the word compelled, and it's exactly how it felt. You had to go and do this.
Was
there was absolutely no reason not to. And you did say, I might wait a year. I was like, you know what? If you need to do it, go now. Just do it now.
Well, yeah, I said I wanted to wait a year. And it wasn't that you were saying no or yes or anything. It was that, like, in my mind, logistically, it just wasn't possible. I didn't have the money. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the time, everything. And then
suddenly,
miraculously, it all just dropped in.
Yeah. So you had to go. You felt like you had to go, and you had to go. You were basically, you were called to
two
do
Two people
it.
That I would really like to just shout out now are people that just miraculously dropped money into my bank account in order to help make this happen through no real ask or compulsion or anything. I wasn't, you know, they basically just said, oh, do you need money for this? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to. And they're like, cool, we'll give it to you. And one is a guy called Aaron Carter, not the NSYNC singer's brother. Was it NSYNC? Was he Backstreet Boys?
I have no idea.
Backstreet, Nick Carter from the Backstreet Boys,
this
younger brother Aaron Carter, a whole cultural
this
thing.
This is all
he
your
killed
story.
Himself recently. A whole horrible thing.
Wow, okay.
Aaron's from a company called Total Sport, and they organise trail running events around New Zealand.
Aaron is a stand-up guy.
Stand-up human, really lovely man. And he was just like, we'll give you some money for it. I was like, holy moly, like, yeah, thank you so much. And then the other person is a guy called Nick Turner, who, like, probably won't even like me saying his name and giving him thanks on here because he's just so unassuming and so lovely, like both of these humans, just super lovely. And Nick is the owner, the original founder and still majority owner of Sal's Pizza.
Yum.
The best pizza in New Zealand, go and get Sal's. And he gave me cash, Aaron gave me cash, and that cash was what absolutely helped make this possible. But also Nick, as a complete side note, I was like, you know, do you want me to like promote sales along the way? And he's like, yeah, like if you want to just hand some flyers out and stuff, like some not flyers, but some vouchers out.
Discount vouchers.
I was like, yeah. And so he sent me this box of fucking vouchers of thousands of free pizza slices and thousands of $10 gift cards.
Nice.
And obviously too heavy to all carry at once. I was like, what am I supposed to do with these? But I got my dad to send packs of them with my supply packs. And so I became the pizza fairy of the TA. Whereas anyone that met who I thought was at least a decent human being
got a slice of pizza.
Got more than one slice, got a bunch of slices of pizza and $10 vouchers.
I love it.
And these are people in the back country who have not eaten well for a while. And I'm just like, when you get to a town,
you're gonna,
this is what you get.
You're gonna
and the amount of thank you texts I got, or people found me on social media, thank you, pictures of them chomping down on pizza itself was great. But these are the sorts of humans that just come out of the woodwork and are wonderful. So yeah, that was another reason why it fell into place could do it last year.
So there's no reason for you doing it, but for you believed you had to, it was, you were called to do it. It's like everything else that happens in your life. You don't really think about it too much. You just, yep, this is what's happening and off we go.
Okay, I'll tell the story about what was funny. So like I had to go buy all the stuff, right? Because you need the gear.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have a lot of money. You know, that money they gave me was enough to like support me on the trail, but I had to buy all the gear and everything like that. And so trying to do it as cheaply as possible, I bought pretty much everything off AliExpress. And the funny thing is, not one of my pieces of gear failed from AliExpress.
Amazing.
3,000 kilometers. I saw people fail everything everywhere all the time, and not one of my pieces of AliExpress gear failed. And so that was really cool. But... and I'm sure this question was probably might be in there, everything, but so actually we'll go back a second. How did I get to the trailhead? The trailhead is where you start, right? And so I'm in Tauranga. I need to get to Cape Reinga. It's hard to just magically get there. And I'm so lucky. I have wonderful friends. And a friend of mine is like, I will fly you there.
Oh, right.
In a private plane. He's got a plane. He'll fly me there. I'm like, yes, please. Because you can fly to Kai Tire Airport and then that's like 45 minutes drive to the top. And I'm like, yes, that's awesome. The day before I'm leaving, the week before, he's got his 10-day weather forecast. And he's like, there's a cyclone coming. And I don't think I can fly you. So I'm like, okay, cool. So... I'm like, okay, I'm now stuck and I can't get to the top. And my dad goes, I'll drive you. Because me and him have been meaning to go on a road trip. Cape Reinga is one of my favorite places in the world. Let's go, Dad. Then the day before he's due to go up, I think it was my mum's brother who was very ill, and they actually thought he was going to die at that time. Subsequently died after, but at this time he ended up surviving, but Dad needed to stay. Mm-hmm. And so now I have like nobody. And then, so I just put it on my social media and I'm like, hey, I need to get to Cape Reinga. Anyone want to give me a ride? And so I got a ride to Auckland. I did a radio interview with George FM in that morning. And they're like, so when are you starting? I'm like, now. They're like, what do you mean now? I was like, literally, I'm leaving this interview in the studio and I'm going to Cape Reinga. And they're like, holy shit, okay. And so I walk out and a guy from Instagram who I don't know picks me up and he drives me to Whangarei. And then we tag a guy in Whangarei who drives me all the way to Cape Reinga and drops me off.
Amazing.
At the start. Like just absolute legend. And this is a theme that will continue throughout the entire walk that, you know, we haven't even figured out yet, but I haven't even started. So I start walking and it's just me. And there's, you know, there's Asian tourists down at the end of Cape Reinga taking all the photos, then me, and then that was it. There was just... there was about five or six of them and me. And so they leave, then I leave, and then you walk from the lighthouse down, and then usually you continue up the path to the car park, but there is a path that you can go right down to the beach. And so I start walking down this beach, beautiful, stunning, not 90 Mile Beach yet, but the Cape just before that. One of the first things that I'm thinking as I'm walking down there, beautiful sunny day. Oh, it was horrific. The whole drive up was hail and everything. It was horrible weather. I took videos of it. It was horrific. Get to Cape Reinga and not a cloud in the sky. Absolutely stunning. And I just take beautiful photos, walk down the beach. And as I'm walking down the beach, I'm like, Jesus Christ, you talk some shit. You just say you're going to do things and then you have to do them and then magically you're doing them.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am 1 kilometer into 3,025.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do I get myself in these situations? What the fuck am I doing? But I always say that. And then I always end up doing it.
Yeah.
And then I've done it and it's just a thing that I did.
Right.
And it's surreal because the first day is not much of a day. It's not that long. It's 14 kilometers. One of your questions was, how do I train for this? I'm just going stories inside of stories inside of stories. How do I train for it? My hiking group here in Puerto goes twice a week. We do anywhere from 10 to 20 Ks. But the temperature here is 32 to 42 and humidity is 90%. And I was carrying about 16 kilograms in my pack while training here, even though the heaviest my pack would ever be on the longest food carry was 14 kilograms in New Zealand.
I need to just say for anyone listening, just to point out that that Jimmy Hunt is not normal. I mean, in no way in his life is he a normal human being, but I go on these hikes here with him occasionally and he's always out the front. He's always, you know, super far ahead of everyone.
Never been second at a hike, no.
Like it's a race. And then even when he was doing these training hikes, I think I went twice while he was training and he stuffed his bag full of all kinds of stuff.
Your dumbbells from the gym.
From the gym, yeah.
That's my weight.
He's still racing off ahead and is obviously super fit and very, very capable. I have nicknamed him a lot, you know, over the years, a mountain goat, because he can actually get up and down crazy crevices and rock faces that nobody else can and has this, you know, just innate sense of belonging on a trail. So your training, while it was difficult for you-ish, was actually quite intense. Do you play it down because you don't think you really...
It's resistance training, right? It's altitude training. It's, it's the train harder than you need to play.
Yeah.
Right? So when I get to New Zealand, like my first... So you've got 4 days from Cape Reinga to Ahipara.
Mm-hmm.
And... So you've got, let's say, 4 kilograms worth of food and some water. And so I have 10, 11 kilograms in my pack. So I'm already 5 kilograms under what I was training for. And New Zealand was 20 degrees and low humidity.
So it's more comfortable.
And I was just like, oh, this is easy.
Yeah, right.
Always overtrain so that you're much more comfortable.
Yeah.
Now, I'm walking along the beach, and this is where I'm actually trying to get to all the way back from this very long-winded story. I turn up late. So I had traveled all day in these cars and everything. I didn't leave until like 4:30 from Cape Reinga, and it's like 3.5 hours until the first stop. And so it was past – I was due to get in about 20 minutes past sunset. On my first
Which
day.
Is not great because you've got to pitch a tent. You've got
to do all things.
Set up camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I did it in like 2 and a bit hours or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not surprised.
And so I got in there, but I was still last there. And there were 5 people who started on the same day that I did who were there. And I start pitching my tent and all this sort of stuff. And it's just the classic hiker talk of, whoa, what tent is that? Da, 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 da. And I'm like, and you're like, oh, she asked me how I was pitching him. I said, oh, I've never pitched this before. She said, oh, it's a brand new tent. I'm like, yeah, it's a brand new tent. She's like, but you know, do you do this often? I was like, oh, no, this is the first time I've ever camped out overnight in my life. And she's like, what? You've never done a multi-day hike, a two-day hike. You've never hiked somewhere, stayed the night. I was like, no.
Gone camping in the pop-top caravan.
Oh, yeah, gone camping in a campground.
Yeah, lovely.
Yeah. But I never walked anywhere and camped.
Yeah.
And she just blew her mind. And you didn't practice this before? I was like, no, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And I just always have this innate sense of I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. I'll figure it out as I go along. Mm-hmm. I'll make it work. It'll be fine. And so that's kind of how it started.
Yeah. Just going to do it. Made a decision. Yeah. Off you go.
Yeah.
It'll work itself out.
Exactly.
Whatever happens, happens, and you'll be able to tell stories afterwards.
But that's adventure to me.
Well, that's your life.
My adventure to me is not knowing the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, like, well, I guess I didn't know the outcome. I didn't know if I'd be able to make it to the end. I didn't know how it was going to turn out. I didn't know what would happen.
But you assumed the best.
Yeah. I figured I'd smash it.
Yeah. I mean, one of the questions we had was, you know, what were your preparations like, your physical, your mental, you know, and your equipment? But you've kind of answered that. There weren't really any.
No.
There was a little bit of training, but you just kind of, I guess, believed in that voice that told you to go.
Yeah.
So you went.
You go.
Right?
Yeah, you just follow.
Yeah.
Like you just go. Now, like, I'm going to caveat that with don't be a fucking idiot.
Of course.
Like, don't go up into the mountains unprepared.
No.
Don't go do things that you don't know and understand.
Yeah, because you did look at groups of people who have done this before and get their suggestions about equipment and things
You don't want to be underprepared.
Yeah.
And also knowing the terrain is really important. And so, like, for example, there's really no danger in the first quarter of the trail.
Right.
Because it's pretty much sea level the entire way. It's the top of the North Island.
Mm-hmm.
And the top of the North Island is pretty flat.
Yeah.
And so you're not getting into alpine regions. You're not having, you know, really not. And Northland, you know, in the north top of the North Island, pretty skinny as well. So, like, even settlements, you may be in the middle of the bush, but, like, if you walk directly towards a settlement, it might only be 10Ks away, you know, so.
You're pretty safe.
Yeah, reasonably safe. So I knew that I was going to build up my experience as I went anyway.
So did you have any particular feeling when you're taking your first steps? Like, were you excited or were you nervous or was there any kind of anything going on?
Yeah, well, as I said, those first steps, well, one, I was excited. I was like, fucking A, let's go. But those first steps were really that K down the road where I'm like, what the fuck am I actually doing? Like, I have no experience in this. I have no understanding of this. This is just, it's a big stupid thing that, you know, most of the people, like a big chunk, there's no official statistics, but most people don't finish it.
This is what I was about to ask you then. When you had that feeling, did you think, well, okay, well, I'm in it now. I have to stick to it. Or did you kind of feel like, oh, I know I could just not
bail out? No, I can never bail. Like, right. I'm always going to figure
finish
it
what
out.
You start, yeah.
I had no shame in bailing.
Right.
Especially when we had a whole bunch of cyclones come through and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
Like, there are small sections that I skipped that I have no shame in saying that I skipped for safety reasons.
Yeah, right.
There was literally not someone who was walking the TA, but there was a section I skipped due to a cyclone and a New Zealand guy who was tramping up there died.
Wow.
When I would have been up in that section.
Wow.
Well, you shouldn't have been in that section because of the weather at that stage.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, that was a good fucking call.
And look, there's nobody counting your steps or measuring where you've gone.
No.
So it's really a personal decision.
Yeah.
So I want to backtrack a little bit because when you set out, you explained what the TA was to me and you explained that people roughly take around 4 months or maybe they take longer depending on how many times they stop and whatever.
Yeah, but 120 to 150 days.
Right. But standard. You had a goal in your head and this is because it's specifically brand Jimmy Hunt to do things differently to everyone else. You had a goal in your head that you wanted to do this in under 100 days. Not 100, under 120 days.
No, under 100 days.
But under 100 days because why wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, so now you're asking a question that I actually don't know the answer to. Why did I decide to do that? I can't fucking remember.
I'm curious. Is it, I feel like, because it's you always just want to challenge yourself to do things faster, better, stronger, whatever, to see if you can, to push yourself, because you do have a bit of a determination about you. Like, if I'm going to do it, I'm just going to do it the best.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not a race. And if you want to do it the best, like a dude ran it in, like, I don't remember what it is. It's something stupid.
But to walk it in 100 days is an achievement. And so
it would be in the top, I would say it would be in the top 1%. Oh, 1 to 3% of times.
I feel like maybe you decided 100 days because you couldn't stand to be away from me for longer than that.
Well, it was logistically a bit like you're 150 days.
It's a long time.
It's 5 months.
Yeah.
Like that's a long, long time. And we don't need it to be that long. So the people that take 150 days are really the international tourists who are like, I'm going to look at every view that is possible and take in everything I possibly can, and good on them if they can do that and take that time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right. I'm going to jump into some of the questions that we've had come through because I think there's some really interesting stuff in here. And I know that this story could go along chronologically, but it would take hours. But I'm just going to pick from some of the really great questions we've come through, and you can answer as best you can. Okay, so if the landscape of New Zealand could speak, what would it have told you?
Yeah, I like the existential questions.
Yeah.
Like, ironically, you've picked that question straight after you just asked about speed, because I reckon that if the landscape of New Zealand could say anything, it would say slow down.
And I feel the whole thing was just a lesson for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, like when you end up in some of what can really only be described as the most spectacular land on planet Earth, what's your hurry?
Right.
Like, why the fuck would you be in a hurry to get back to a city or a town or even Mexico?
Or a disaster of a building site back home.
Yeah, right? Like, it's like, experience me. Like, stop and experience me.
Okay.
And the cool thing is that it doesn't have to be in a literal length. It can be moments, right?
Okay.
And so, like, I think New Zealand landscape says experience me, and that can be like, I mean, you could be running the length of New Zealand and just get to a spot and go fucking 30 seconds. I will take 30 seconds off this record just to fucking experience this.
I love it. And we haven't touched on it yet, but we talked about why you did this, and it was just, there was no reason, you just felt compelled to do it. But in the end, as you do with everything in your life, it actually becomes a thing and it has a purpose and it's driven by purpose.
Yeah, of course.
And so you talking about the land speaking to you to say slow down really speaks to one of the tenets of what it became for you, what the journey became about. One of them was communicating or experiencing the land, really.
Connecting with the land.
Connecting with it, yeah. Exactly. So it really, what you're saying as one of the goals of your journey was to help others understand that connection with the land was important for mental fitness.
Yes.
That's exactly what the land was telling you.
Yes, as exactly. Well. So what Libby was alluding to there was like sort of the campaign around my walk was about connection. Connection with the self, connection with the land, and connection with other people. And those three facets of connection greatly improve your mental fitness. And so connection with the land, yeah, like that's kind of what the land was saying. Experience me, connect with me, be a part of me. And I think that I gained a far greater appreciation for that connection by doing this walk. And I also don't think that's unique. I don't understand how anybody could not gain a greater appreciation having spent 91, there's a spoiler, I did it under 100 days. It took me 91 days. But spending 91 days on that land.
So explain to us a little bit about why connecting with the land is important and beneficial for your mental fitness. What exactly does that do for us?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like connecting with the land is first of all, is grounding 101. what is literally one of our most shared, I think it might be the most shared podcast I have done, is with my very good friend Nigel Beach. And the topic was essentially grounding.
Mm-hmm.
Got no idea what number it is. Go back a few, might be in the 70s, I think. We talk about the science of grounding. And basically, one, just listen to that podcast. But two, in its simplest form, we have a nervous system. Most of the people in the modern era, unfortunately, have a dysregulated nervous system. The easiest way to get into your parasympathetic nervous system state, which is your rest, relaxation, rejuvenation state, is through the breath. But the most natural and easiest way to do it is through grounding, which is simply touching the ground.
Pretty
it's
simple.
Not that hard.
But for a period of time, yeah. Not just a second.
Well, no, but even just a second.
Right.
So we are like, again, all in the podcast, but the fact that we wear rubber shoes, which disconnects us with the ground, you know, since the 70s, we've predominantly had rubber-soled shoes. We are not discharging the electrical charge that is building up in our bodies through talking into microphones, being around computers, being surrounded by this electrical charge. There's a very good reason why your household it has grounding wires in its plugs. That bottom one in your plug system, that's the
very
ground.
Very important.
That's what anchors you to the ground, stops you getting electrocuted. You have to ground. You sleep on the ground. You walk on the ground. I'll tell you, Maria yesterday, she's one of my tennis students, and she's like, I saw you on your scooter with your big stick yesterday. She's like, I'm assuming you were coming back from a hike. I was like, yeah. I was like, why do you have your big stick? And what's interesting was I didn't even put this two and two together until I saw it on a TikTok. And this woman was like, I carry a stick with me on all my walks. Because even when walking in nature, we have our rubber-soled shoes on.
Yeah.
And we're not connecting as much as we could be. We might touch trees or roots as we go along. We might sit down later on. So it's all, in general, good for you. But if you have a stick, like a walking stick, every time you touch the ground, you are discharging and you are connecting with the earth. And so that's why on all of my hikes, I have this big gnarled.
It's pretty gnarly.
Cool walking stick it's that I found and made.
Very, you shall not pass.
Yeah, it's very Gandalf-y.
It really is.
As my beard gets whiter, I'm more Gandalf-y.
He's cosplaying.
With my stick.
He's cosplaying in the forest.
Yeah, I don't think Gandalf had a machete though.
I love it.
Yeah.
But apart from grounding, there's other benefits to being out in nature. You've talked about it in podcasts before. You talk about it on your Instagram a bunch.
There's whole bathing. Fields of psychology around ecotherapy, around even there is just, and I can't remember the term for it. I remember reading about it in Lost Connections by Johan Hari, and about taking people to mountaintops to get them to understand how small they are and how insignificant they are, and therefore how small and insignificant their problems are. And that's not to diminish yourself or your problems, but it's to give you perspective on how you can overcome them.
Yeah.
Which I think is really cool. Very, very hard to be depressed standing on a mountaintop. Very hard.
Right. No, I like it. And you can... Jimmy does share a lot of wisdom around the benefits of nature and connecting with nature in his social media and on other podcasts and everything. So there's a lot of research being done in that field, and it is fascinating. And it is one of the, like you said, the three pillars of your particular journey that was a super important thing for you to promote to people.
Let's move on to another question about music.
About music?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Leading me. So, well, it just so happens to, I just so happen to have one here. Funny you should mention that. What music or podcast or what did you choose to listen to on your hike?
Good question, Libby, that I knew you had right there. And the question I wanted to skip to. I had no podcasts, no books, and no music at all on
what?
The trail.
Why?
I talk about shower thoughts. I talk about them in my last book. I talked about them in my talks. And basically shower thoughts are when you're in the shower, thoughts come to you, they're interesting, they're funny, whatever. And the question is why? And it's because it's really the only time in a modern person's day where they are not bombarded with stimulus. Whether it's music, books, podcasts, screens, other people, work, whatever it is. What an unbelievably fantastic opportunity it is to disconnect from everything other than yourself and nature when you walk a long way. And to my dismay, I saw person after person. When I say I saw, because I did it in 91 days and I walk a lot faster and a lot further than everyone every day, I pass a lot of people every day.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody is listening to headphones.
Everyone's plugged in.
They are plugged in to their music, their books, their podcasts in order to distract themselves from the monotony of walking.
One little caveat here. If you are doing the TA and you happen to want to listen to a podcast, this one would be a great one.
Don't fucking listen to this podcast when you're walking the TA. Do not listen to any podcast when you go for a walk. Use that time for connection to the self. Only after you have become so bored of all of your thoughts does creativity arise.
Right.
Does insight arise? Does intuition arise?
Mm-hmm.
There were people on the side of hills in the middle of the night watching TV shows that are downloaded in their tents at night.
You're very tense about this, aren't you?
I am very tense about this.
So, okay, then tell us the benefits that you discovered for yourself, because you do listen to music and you watch TV and, you know, you're a normal human being.
I'm not a fucking monk.
But tell us what did you experience about yourself and what profound or perhaps
I found
thoughts did you have?
Creativity, insight, and intuition.
And how did that look?
By not having that, by letting the minutia of my life fade away, the repetitive thoughts suddenly become so repetitive that you're like, why am I even bothering to repeat this? Mm-hmm. So you stop repeating it. And it allows you to come up with new insights, new perspectives, and new understandings of everything in your life. You get to think about your relationships, your work, your being, your purpose, your values. All of these things become basically a priority.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when we are consistently distracting ourselves, or, okay, I'll just give myself half an hour of not listening to something, right? It's not enough time to find that space.
Yeah.
Like, you remember back in the day when I took the radio, the stereo, out of the Cortina?
Yeah.
So that I couldn't listen to music while I drive?
Yeah, it was great. We used to go on road trips and we'd put a, you know, playlist on or whatever and sing along or whatever, and then we turned it off. You started turning it off, and then you just removed it.
So if we're in the car, we have conversations.
Yeah.
But I have to drive 3 hours, 5 hours, whatever.
There's no one to talk to.
I can't distract myself with music, right?
Great.
And so I have to go through that. And that was the start of this practice of mine. And this was almost the culmination of it. 91 days where I didn't have to do all of these things. But the reason that I wanted to segue to this question was that I had one song that I allowed myself to play whenever I wanted it. And the only times I did play this song were in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the forest, when I'm by myself. I played it for one person because I was telling the story to this one person and they asked about it and could they play it, and I said yes. And the song is Shinrin Yoku. And it is by my favorite band, Enter Shikari. which is ironic because our cat Shikari just tried to enter, but he couldn't get in because the door's closed.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So yeah, my cat's name Shikari after Enter Shikari. And I play this song when I am in it, and I'm going to, because hey, it's my podcast, I can do whatever the hell I like. I'm going to read you the lyrics to this song, because Rao, who is the lead singer of Enter Shikari, over the last few years has become an avid hiker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what it is, but there's kind of one that goes across Scotland that he did, which might be a few hundred kilometers long, I think. He did that one. But these are the lyrics to Shinrin Yoku by Enter Shikari. Surrounded, sunk deep in the dense embrace of the forest. I imagine this is the polar opposite of suffocation. My lungs seem to gain extra capacity here. And I feel like an empty inbox as I contemplate the ultimate assault course, the roots, the stumps, the branches. I squint into eternity as I try to get to grips with the fact that we have no idea what we're dealing with. My lungs fill with air. I feel supercharged now. My lungs fill with air. I feel supercharged. I'm hyper aware. I shiver and short circuit at the depth of the universe. We are the dust on the stained glass windows, trying to comprehend the cathedral. Those are the abridged lyrics of Shinrin Yoku by Enter Shikari, and I fucking love them. I'm in awe of the way Rao thinks. He's produced a couple of books on the lyrics to his music and where he gets his ideas from, and like the books he reads to inform his thinking, which I very much appreciate because I can then look at those books. This is one he got from hiking, and I think it's completely spot on. A shivering short circuit at the depth of the universe that only comes by being able to be embraced by the forest. We are the dust on the stained glass windows trying to comprehend the cathedral. Like when you get out there, when you sit atop a mountain, you are dust on a stained glass window that is the universe. And it is an absolute mindfuck to try and comprehend, yet intensely beautiful at the same time. You cannot find that. You cannot experience that if you are walking through the forest with AirPods in, listening to a true crime podcast. Take your headphones out.
I feel personally attacked at that last comment.
You were personally attacked at that last comment.
Love true crime.
The comprehension that you can gain by walking anywhere. And when I talk about walking the length of New Zealand or walking a through hike or walking in the forest, you can find the same thing at the beach. You can find the same thing at a park. Or, you know, New Zealand is so spoiled for short little nature reserves that you can go and find this exact same thing on. Like, you know, we walk up Mount Maunganui when we're at home and there are thousands of people walking up that. We have a beautiful little perch that we have shared and discovered just off, like 10 meters from the trail that looks into eternity that nobody knows about and you can't, but we are so isolated when we are there and we can find that peace there. You can find it, but you have to look. And then occasionally you play this as loud as your phone will play it in the middle. And I sing loudly.
Yes, you do. I love it. All right, I'm going to move on to another.
I reckon we've got time for one more question.
Okay.
And as we figured at the start of this.
It's going to be a long one.
We're going to split this up into multiple things.
Okay.
There are so many insights that I gained. And because Libby let me look at these questions beforehand, I'm like, yeah, I've got stories for all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will do part two of this and shit, maybe even part three.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go on a journey like that and not have a lot of, especially you.
Yeah, and let's get it done in an hour.
All
no,
these
we
insights.
Don't need to. It's our podcast. We can do whatever we like.
All right, well then I'm going to ask one, that's quite a deep philosophical one or one that you might have to think a little bit about.
Right.
So tell us about a time you came to a crossroads, literally or metaphorically, and how did you make your decision?
Okay. I have two, a literal and a metaphorical. I'll spoil the first intro chapter to my new book with this story. And I told a 60-second version of it on my Instagram Reels as well. But basically, cyclones absolutely destroyed this part of the trail just south of Kaitaia. Basically, Trail A was destroyed. State Highway 1 was destroyed. You can't even drive down State Highway 1 and still can't because of this. And I had started walking to do this other part, which was basically option C. And again, I'll make this short, but I get to this bit and these people come the other way and they were turning around and they said, look, and I'd already walked 15 Ks on the asphalt that day to get to this piece of forest. And these people turned back and they'd said, look, you can't pass. The stream, which is usually ankle deep, is a raging torrent and we can't get across it. And me being me, I'm like, fuck, I can get across it. And then they showed me a video of it. I was like, I can't get across that. they put their poles in and it was above their poles and a raging torrent. And so there was literally nothing we could do. And so I had to turn around, walk 15 Ks back to Kaitaia. And so I completely was like, yeah, I'm going to walk the length of New Zealand. I'm going to walk every step, close enough to at least. And there was literally no options. And so, well, the options were two options. One, wait a week.
In Kaitaia.
In Kaitaia for the water to go down and to be able to cross. But there was rain forecast next week as well.
Mm.
Or take a bus all the way around to Kerikeri and keep going, making me miss, I think it was 47 kilometers of official trail that I would not have walked on. So approximately, to say, 2 days. 2 days worth of walking. Cheating if you don't do it right.
Yeah.
And like, basically, through logistical issues, timing, money, all of that sort of stuff, like I didn't really want to wait up to a week in Kaitaia. And so I didn't really have any choice but to go around to Kerikeri, and I didn't want to do it. And so a bunch of people caught the bus around. I didn't want to even pay for the bus. So I decided I'd hitchhike. I'm a pro at hitchhiking around New Zealand. I don't think I've ever told the story, I'm not going to tell it now, but I hitchhike raced around New Zealand. So I've done it many times, but I went out and I wasn't happy about having to go around. But in this crossroads, this metaphorical crossroads, I had to make a choice of whether I would abandon walking the entire length of every part of it or just kind of walk it in general. And so I had to abandon that crossroad. And I got picked up by a guy who then dropped me at a literal physical crossroads, which is like State Highway 1 and State Highway fucking 23 or whatever it is. And it's a perfect place to get picked up. I'm there. There is like a good distance after them seeing me to be able to pull over. They've got to assess how good looking is this man. Does he have weapons? Is he going to kill me? No, I'm going to pick him up. Plenty of traffic goes past. I get no one to pick me up and I am pissed off. This is Northland, friendliest people in the country. Pick you up, take you anywhere. 15 minutes has gone past, 50 cars. No one's picked me up. I'm sitting there and I hear in my head, go to the bakery. It's 8 o'clock in the morning. I don't eat breakfast. I'm not hungry. I've already eaten enough pies being back in New Zealand a couple of weeks. And I go to the bakery. I'm like, no, I don't need to go to the bakery. So I keep finger out. No one picks me up. I then get another feeling, just hear it in my head, go to the bakery. I start looking around. I'm like, there is no bakery around here. And then I sort of look and I sort of glance and there's a sandwich board outside a building which is maybe 500 meters away. And I'm like, and it's the first building, the only building. And I sort of look and I'm like, I think that's a sandwich board for a bakery. All right. Oh, fuck it. I'll go have a pie for breakfast. Why not? So I walk down there and I'm getting closer. I'm like, I don't actually want a pie. Like, I don't want one. And then I go and I get to the door. I'm like, I don't even want to eat. I take two steps in the door. And this big Maori dude goes, what's that? And I'm like, it's my satellite tracker. He's like, what does it do? I said, like, so people can find me, like they can follow me and you know, in need be, it's a compass, I can navigate with it. He's like, oh. Yeah, we need some of those. I was like, okay. He's like, do you like this one? I was like, I've used it like 4 days. So yeah, he's like, oh, cool. He goes, what are you doing? And I told him what I had to do. And he's like, oh. So it looks like you're coming with us then. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, we're going to Kerikeri. Let's go.
Amazing.
And so he calls his mate over who just finished ordering at the bakery. I go and get in the car with them. I'd taken two steps inside the bakery, then two steps back outside the bakery, and like, awesome, done. And so I'm in the car with these two guys and, you know, who you are, what are you doing, blah, blah, blah. And they are two officers, environmental officers for the local iwi. I think there's five iwi in that top Northland bit. I can't remember which one they are, but they're environmentals. And they're off to Kerikeri to meet with the Minister for Aquaculture. Yeah, who the hell knew we had a Minister for Aquaculture, but we do. And so we start talking about the difference between Western culture and Indigenous cultures in regards to mental health. And so we'll talk about that. Then we start talking about the difference in Western culture and Indigenous culture in terms of language. And he says to me, I'll give you a good example. The word aroha, you think it means love. I'm like, yeah, it fucking does. That's what we've been told our entire lives. Like, if you know more than six words in Māori, you know aroha and you know it means love. And he's like, yeah, not quite. And because we're talking about how English languages, Western languages, they kind of come from the head, whereas Indigenous languages come from the heart. And he said, doesn't quite mean love. I said, what does it mean then? He said, and like, I have to pause for a second right now because I need to memorize this correctly because I really don't like telling this story without really checking in on the notes that I wrote in the car that day because I want it to be so right. And he says, split the word up into its two components, aro and ha. Aro means to pay attention to something. And ha is the breath of life. And his example was, he said, you remember in primary school when like you have that girl who you just have a crush on and like it's not love, but you just pay attention to everything that she does? I was like, yeah, like I remember that. And he's like, that is for somebody else, to pay attention to someone else. And he said, to see them in their utmost being. And I was like, ah, yeah, I get that. And then he said, but Aro, for yourself, is to see yourself in your utmost being. Like to that's really just being true to yourself. And ha is the breath of life. It is their essence. It is their utmost self. And so to have aroha for someone is to see who they truly are in their utmost self. And to have aroha for yourself is to see yourself in your truest essence, in your truest form. It is kind of about love, but it is really about connection. And these two boys are sitting in the front of the car. I'm in the back of the car. Tears just start fucking coming down my face. Like this is an understanding and a perspective shift that has just internally changed the makeup of who I am. Didn't tell them I was crying. But I just had tears coming down my face. And it made me understand, and it was a crossroads in my life of going, oh, I'm not looking for love. I'm looking for aroha with everybody, but most importantly with myself, to pay attention to your utmost being. There's my metaphorical crossroads. I should have finished this one because my literal crossroads was that's still a good story, but that would have been a nice way to finish the podcast. It's still a good story. So I'm walking. I'm in central Canterbury, and there is a river that I have to cross. But as usual, there has been horrific weather. This time, up the top of the hills in the Southern Alps, on the west coast mainly, it was sunny where I was. But the river was swollen. And I got to it, and I was scared. The water was grey, couldn't see the bottom, and it was going fast. I didn't know if it was 6 inches deep or fucking 6 feet deep. To go around, which is something I do not like to do, was 10 extra kilometres on my 35-kilometre day. And I looked at this, and it was really funny because I looked at it and I was like, should I cross it? And I was like, check in with myself, should I cross it? And then I was like, why don't I just ask my wife? I was like, Libby, should I cross this river? And you were like, no, don't cross the fucking river. And I was like, okay, sure. And so I really dishearteningly, that's a word.
It is now.
Turned left and walked down the side of this river for 5 kilometers to the nearest bridge. And I kind of just had a feeling that it was the right decision. So I walked an extra 5 kilometers, which is, you know, like 50 meters to cross the river. And I've done 5 and I have to go back. So I'll go back and I'll literally 50 meters from where I started.
Yeah.
And so I get to the bridge and I'm like, yeah, it's the right choice. And I am in the middle of nowhere. I see a car, like a dust car, dust come from a car, across and down the river. And I'm like, go. And I just start running across the bridge and running to get to the gravel road on the other side. And just as I get there, I throw my thumb up and it is a dock ranger going to check the toilets at the end of the road.
Love it.
He drives me the 5 kilometers back to the other end of the 50 meters from where I was. So I only ended up having to walk an extra 5 kilometers. And so from there, I had to walk maybe 10, 15 kilometers. And this guy turns up later that evening, and he had done the all the way around. And I said, "Oh yeah, that's good. I didn't really want to cross it." He said, "Yeah, I watched a guy try and cross it behind me when I was on the other side of the river." I said, "What happened?" He said, "He got swept down the river."
Yeah.
And like when we say swept down the river, I heard of, I think, 4 or 5 people who were swept down rivers. And
that's not fun.
They all survived. They're all fine.
But not a good time.
But they were all battered, bruised, most of all disheartened.
Yeah.
Most of them lost significant amounts of gear.
Yeah.
And so were basically unable to continue without going out and, you know, fixing or finding or buying new versions of that gear. And that guy said, "I never saw that person afterwards." So he doesn't know where they went.
Yeah.
And they never turned up at camp that night. So they obviously didn't get across or didn't have all the things or whatever. And that was a literal crossroads where I made the right decision. And I made it by checking in, by being intuitive and listening to my wife.
I was going to say,
it was never even there.
There's two things there, because the question was, how did you come to your decision? And, you know, what did you decide to do? And in both instances, you've checked in with yourself. I think
I felt my way forward instead of thought my way forward.
Right, exactly. And I think what I would love for people to know about themselves, and a lot of people don't understand this or don't kind of think it's true or whatever, but everything you need to know is within you. That is how we're created. We have all of our wisdom, all of our knowledge, everything we need to do to get through this lifetime is inside of us. The key is learning how to find it and access it. And that's the struggle as a human being.
It is.
We talked about this in other
podcasts. It's literally what I was telling Pip yesterday on that phone call.
Right. You got to shuffle through all the nonsense and all the noise and all of the stuff that's happening around you to listen to your intuition. And in both of the cases of your metaphorical and your physical crossroads, you trusted your instinct. You trusted the voice inside yourself that told you what to do. And I think that is such a leap forward in having great mental fitness, is putting into practice the things that get you to a point where when you are faced with a difficult decision, you can just go, what would I tell myself to do? That's the answer.
Yeah. So let's make this long podcast even longer.
Oh, no.
So I wrote a chapter in my last book about this called The Three Brains, about making decisions from your head, your heart, or your gut. So you should just go buy my book and read that, or go back to the book and reread it. But I was helping a friend yesterday, and we were talking about this, and she was saying, "Well, how?" And the answer is to train it. You have to train your instincts. And so the best way to do it is to, just trying to remember what I was saying yesterday, but it is to basically ask yourself questions and then feel for the answers instead of think for the answers, right? And so one of the good things is to ask yourself questions you already know the answer to, so you can learn the feeling. And so for Pip yesterday, Pip is a friend of ours who is sensitive to a lot of things. And so I said to her, sit down, close your eyes, and ask yourself the question, should I go and get myself 2 Big Mac combos and eat them? It's a wrap, baby. You're allowed to laugh into the microphone.
I'm just like, lol, because it's Pip.
But that's not right for her,
no,
right?
No, vegetarian slash partly vegan,
yeah,
very clean,
yeah.
Would never.
Yeah, and just, but it doesn't serve her body.
Right.
Like energetically.
No.
Like if she eats like that, not good.
No.
And then I laughed to myself when I asked the question because my answer is fucking yes.
Of course.
Like I'll just go eat the two Big Mac combos. They're great. They'll fuel me as good as any food. Like I'm a weirdo. That's fine. But what I'm saying is that if she sits there and thinks that question and then feels for the answer, she knows inherently what the answer is, right?
Yeah.
But so then she can equate that feeling with knowing what is not right for her,
mm-hmm.
right? And so there are a bunch of things in her world that she can ask herself that question, know inherently the answer, and then learn that feeling.
She's looking for the reaction, the exactly. physical sensation.
The feeling, not the thought.
Yeah.
And then she can ask herself some more slightly ambiguous questions, right? And it might be about what she has for dinner. It might be about should she go out to an event or should she hang out with this person or should... Like any of these shoulds, you start having this inherent feeling about what is right for you in this moment. And the more you practice it, the more you get in tune with that feeling, the easier it is to pull out in situations that are bigger and scarier.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like I'm not saying like when you're on your big walk and you have this big thing, like, you know, just trust your gut. Which well, you should, but what I'm saying is that I have been practicing that for a long time, and so when I ask a question and I feel for the answer, because my brain was like, "You can make it through."
Mm-hmm.
My brain is like, "You could actually do this,"
mm-hmm.
and I could do this, and I can weigh up the logical chances of me, you know, getting swept down the river. If I got swept down the river, I would actually be fine. I'd be able to sort myself out and get out. I'd camp next to the river. I'd drive, whatever. Like I'm. If I use my brain for that, like, yeah, I could have done it probably. But I used my gut, my instinct of whether it should. And I knew that when that feeling came, I shouldn't override it.
Yeah.
Because I knew that I have already equated that to being correct in all of these other instances.
Yeah. So
you have to train it.
There's another side of that, just very, very quickly. When you mentioned that at the river, you said you'd ask Libby. I was thinking, I don't remember you calling me in that situation, but you didn't. Okay. But for people who haven't trained that intuition and people who haven't kind of got that insight into themselves and that trust in their instinct, that is a really safe bet. What Correct. Would Libby, Jesus, whoever do? You know, there's that whole, yeah. what would they do? You yeah. can either physically call that person for advice and help, Correct. Really good tool at your disposal, or think about it from a perspective of someone you trust their opinion and you trust their advice. What would they tell me in this situation? And you pretty much know what they'd say. You know what I would say 100 yep. times. So a really nice tool for people who don't have that locked in feeling of understanding their intuition is reach out for advice, reach out for help, or ask yourself, what would
yep.
that person say to me in this situation?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so whether it's a friend or a mentor or a partner, or even just thinking about what a smart person you admire would do, then it gets you to the point of what would my higher self do,
mm-hmm.
right? What would the best version of myself do? What would the ultimately wise and all-knowing version of myself do? And then when you start that conversation, that's when you really get in touch with your intuition.
Love it.
All right, that's the end of the podcast.
Woo! Finally.
We'll be going in an hour 15. It's a nice,
sorry,
nice
everybody.
Length podcast. And we've gone through maybe half the questions.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, maybe. All right. So we'll probably do a part two on this. We will do a part two on this. That will be our thing. I hope you enjoyed this, ladies and gentlemen. I obviously enjoyed telling these stories. It was a great time in my life. It was a great experience. But I think I learned a lot. And I think those lessons are mostly universal. And that's why I'm so eager and excited to share them with you. Thanks for helping me, Libby.
Thanks for inviting me.
We'll see you all next time. Love you. And also, if you have any other questions, send them through too. Bye-bye now.
That was Inside Out with Jimmy Hunt. See you next time.